Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvin Vora. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today. Unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. Right now, there has been an increased focus on the question of foreign aid because of the total economic collapse happening in Venezuela. People have been saying we have countries like Venezuela whose, you know, admittedly stupid policies, their government micromanagement of every part of the economy, rampant with the usual government corruption, compounded with that kind of arrogance that says that one or two or 15 people can decide all the decisions for everybody in an entire country. Their ignorance of humanity that suggests that every single person wants the same things and has the same order of preferences and the same desires and the same things that they choose when they choose over other things. Admittedly, it's their fault, but people are saying, well, listen, if there's ever a time for foreign aid, isn't it a time like this? Isn't it a time like when you have so many countries throughout the world right now where people are hungry, people need medical care, or people are struggling? Is there a better time? Is there a more appropriate time for foreign aid than right now? And I want to ask a different question. I want to ask, what happens if there's no foreign aid? What happens if we just don't bail out countries that fail? What happens if we shut down all foreign aid today? Interestingly, ending foreign aid is probably one of the most popular libertarian positions. It's one of the positions that actually I came around to last. It was the position that I actually found very difficult to agree with for a long time. Although I do agree with it now, and I'm going to tell you why. During the Wall Street bailout, what would have happened if the U.S. had just refused to bail out those companies? They would have gone out of business. They would have been shut down. Does that mean the economy would have vanished? No. It means that people would invest capital in other investment banks, that people working for Goldman Sachs and places like that would work at other places. And the result would be that you would get more people and more resources working for more competent organizations. Those that made stupid decisions, high-risk decisions, bad economic decisions, bad financial decisions, bad investing decisions wouldn't be rewarded for it. They would just go out of business. And there'd be a little bit of shakeup, and there's probably, you know, people would be looking for new jobs. People who worked at Goldman Sachs might start their own independent hedge funds or investment banks or work somewhere else or leave the financial sector entirely and maybe do something in engineering. Who knows? And to me, that would have been a good thing. We would have no longer had the pernicious influence of some of these organizations. Now, what happens if we shut down foreign aid? If we simply shut down the World Bank, IMF, no more foreign aid for anybody. My guess, the countries will go out of business. They'll become insolvent. The governments of those countries, not the country itself isn't going anywhere. The landmass isn't going to vanish. The people aren't going to vanish. But yeah, the governments are going to go out of business. Those governments will cease to exist. The currencies that they use, assuming that they're not using some other reserve currency, will basically become worthless. And then what happens next? What happens next? Well, one thing that will happen at some point when countries fully run out of money with no hope of any kind of a bailout, one thing that they start considering is selling sovereign territory. Sovereign territory means selling the actual country rights to land. It's different from when you or I buy a house. If you or I buy a house, it doesn't mean it doesn't mean that on my own land I can, you know, set laws and taxes and tariffs and all that. That's not what buying property usually means. Buying property means more like land use, for lack of a better description. Whereas when you buy sovereign territory, that territory becomes has its own inherent value. It becomes its own inherent country. It becomes an independent state. That would be as if you owned, you know, a couple hundred acres or hell, just 1 acre. And on that land, the laws were whatever you wanted them to be. You would set treaties with other countries. That's what sovereign territory is. It's very different. There are many historical sales of sovereign territory. In fact, we've all studied some of them in history class growing up. The Louisiana Purchase. That's when France sold a huge amount of sovereign land to the third president of some upstart rebellion, barely a country at the time, country. That was selling sovereign territory to, you know, what was close enough to a country, basically. And that allowed, that was one of the times when land has been transferred, not through violence and bloodshed, but just through sale. In Asia, we've seen something similar, where China kind of leased Hong Kong and made it the legality around it is so complex, but sort of a British protectorate, for lack of a better description. Because the laws in Hong Kong were a little bit less just unbelievably stupid than the laws in China, it became a major cultural, financial, technological, intellectual powerhouse. A tiny little piece of land. Hong Kong's not very big. It became one of the most culturally and financially important parts of the world. Tiny little piece of land. That's what happens when countries sell sovereign territory, in that case, lease sovereign territory. When countries sell sovereign territory, you're able to create basically new competing countries. Now imagine that for a second. What would that look like? It would look like instead of there being one Hong Kong, there'd be 1,000 Hong Kongs. Different names, obviously, but the principle would be that here's a country with different laws. Some of those countries might choose to have stricter laws. I'm not saying they're all going to be the most libertarian countries in the world ever. Some countries might say, like, listen, if you want to be in this country, you need to wear a tuxedo. Bam, that's the rule of that country. I mean, I might not visit that country too often, but it might have some advantages. It might have a more formal and polite setting. Who knows? When you have competition between countries, it's just as good as when you have competition between restaurants. And when you don't have competition between countries, when you have collusion between countries, that's just as bad as when you have collusion between restaurants or collusion between oil companies or collusion between gas stations. When companies work together, they raise prices and make the service or product usually less good. And when countries work together, the same exact things happen. The price goes up, and the price of living in a country is the taxes and regulations and all that, and the quality goes down, which means the quality of service, etc. We've seen that happening in Europe, where basically through creation of the European Union, regulation is shot through the roof. And we've seen that in America, as the federal government, basically a collusion of state governments, has become bigger and bigger and bigger. Competition between the states has gotten less. So instead of Maryland competing with Virginia to have like the lowest taxes and the best regulations, instead they're all kind of the same. The difference are in state taxes, which are much smaller, and we're all kind of stuck paying these huge, annoying federal taxes and following these huge, annoying federal regulations. Now, how do we create that competition? How do we create country competition? It's simple. Just stop bailing out incompetent governments. Just like we should stop bailing out incompetent companies, we need to stop bailing out incompetent governments. And when we stop bailing them out, they're going to fold. They're going to sell the land. Not just land use. They will sell the sovereign territory. And you know what we're going to see? We're going to see different experiments in government. We will. They're not all going to look the same. You might like them all. I probably won't like them all. But when you create that competition, you now have countries who are actually trying to earn your business through regulatory competition. They're trying to draw you in by making the laws more to your liking. And the point is not that we're trying to find the one best legal system. That's not really what the point is. The point is that there isn't one best legal system, just like there's not one best type of cuisine. There are many types of cuisine. Different people have different preferences. Similarly, there will be different legal systems, different regulatory systems for different preferences. Just like you have in the free market. Just like you have in the free market of companies, you can have that same free market of countries. Suppose you're the type of person that hates all drugs, all alcohol, all cigarettes, all everything. There's probably a country that can cater to that. Let's say you're the opposite, country that caters to that. Let's say you want to pay super high taxes. There'll be a country for you. Let's say you don't want to pay any taxes. Probably a country for you too. The result of this, my prediction will be, is that there will be better regulation even here, even in America. Even if America never sells a single drop of sovereign land, now it's going to have to compete. Right now, America, quote, bails out its competitors, but it basically is setting up collusion with its competitors. If America had to compete with other countries, then they would have to do the things that work. And those things are pretty simple: less regulation, lower taxes, more individual freedom, and not using the taxes that we pay for things that we don't want. That doesn't mean that you're never going to have to pay to use anything ever. Maybe there'll be some country set up by some quadrillionaire with a grant or something, but realistically, in most countries, you'll probably have to pay one way or another for the services, whether through taxes or direct fees. The difference is you're going to see a lot more countries offering services that you want rather than nuisances that get in the way of business, that get in the way of innovation, that get in the way of individual freedom. Now, a lot of parties, a lot of political parties talk about getting rid of foreign aid, simply because getting rid of foreign aid is probably the most politically popular thing you can say in America. It's hard to find, you know, something that polls higher than ending foreign aid. It polls about as high as anything. The difference is that they're lying because they don't want country competition. They don't want to see thousands of new Hong Kongs. They don't want to be in a situation where they need to lower taxes so much that they can no longer hand out money to their cronies. They don't want that. We do. The Libertarian Party, we want that. And if you want that, if you actually legitimately want to end foreign aid so that we see countries selling sovereign territory, so that we see the creation of 1,000 new Hong Kongs, then you need to get to lp.org. And it was specifically, you have to run for office and make that a central part of your run for office. Make that a central part of your platform, that if you're elected, you will sponsor legislation to end all foreign aid. And many libertarian candidates have already done that. It's a popular position, it's politically feasible, and the benefits are greater than almost any other position. If you want to learn more about how to do that, please go to lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
Have you found the beauty inside of you? Join Bonnie Bonadeo each week for Beauty Inside and Out. We'll explain how beauty plays a part in everybody's lives. Our guests are makeup artists, hairdressers, and doctors. But we'll also feature holistic and wellness specialists and spiritual advisors. You can find that beauty inside and express it to its fullest on the outside. Tune in to Beauty Inside and Out every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. One of the questions is, what can the free market provide? And what can the free market not provide? In other words, Could the free market provide roads? Could it provide school? Could it provide a national defense? Could it provide police and security? Like, could it do that? Not does it do it right now. I mean, obviously right now, there's not a major marketplace for private police in neighborhoods. I mean, obviously you have them in malls and casinos and everywhere. So it's not that it's that terribly rare, but, you know. Could it provide that? What can it provide? And I think the formula is very simple. Does anyone want it? Does any person on earth actually want the thing that this service, this government service, for lack of a better word, does anybody want it? Will anybody pay for it? Does anybody want it enough to legitimately pay for it? And at that point, you'll see what the free market will and will not provide. Let's talk about roads. That's a big one, right? Will the free market provide roads? My question is, does anybody want a road? I would say, yeah. Do people like to use roads? Sure. When people have to pay for roads through things like Easy Pass and toll roads, are they willing to pay for them? Sure. If there's a service, if there's something that you want, somebody will provide that service, assuming it can be provided, so you're not asking for magic or something like that. So if it's a service that somebody wants, they'll provide it. And trust me, one thing that we always figure out how to do in the free market is find a way to get you to pay for it. People always find a way to provide the thing, and they'll always find a way to charge you for it. That is the entire litmus test. But let's look at a few examples. It's not bad to think about some examples because the same ones do come up a lot. So let's say that that people say, listen, I want the free market to go around finding people who smoke marijuana and locking them in rape camps. Probably there will probably be a few people who donate to it, but not enough. It's an expensive endeavor to go around locking people up, locking them in rape cages for several years when they haven't hurt anybody. The free market there might be some startup that tries to provide it, but it's going to fail. The free market almost certainly will not provide it. People don't want the war on drugs. They simply don't even want to see it. What about something like the TSA, airplane security? Could the free market provide airplane security? Well, that depends on this question. Do people want airplane security? Are there people on Earth who would be willing to pay a little extra or just choose a particular one airline over another because it was safer? Are there people in the world who care about safety? Are there people who care about their own safety? The safety of their friends, the safety of their family, the safety of their children or spouses? Are there people like that? And I would say, yeah. In that type of situation, the free market most certainly will provide that kind of safety. Here's the thing. Despite what government apologists will have you believe, most airplane companies don't want their planes destroyed. They don't want their passengers killed. They don't want to have bad things happen. So they will try to prevent them. And they're going to all do different things. They're going to try to prevent it in different ways. The results are not always going to be the same for every airline. But I will tell you this. They're probably going to be a lot better than what we have right now. There are going to be airlines who are really trying to offer you something. They want you to come to their airline, not the other airline. A few years ago, a couple airlines started putting in kiosks, self-check kiosks. It made that whole process a lot faster. The result is all the other airlines started doing it too. Check-in, when I was a kid, used to take about an hour of standing in a long, miserable line. Today, checking in takes about 2 minutes. Unfortunately, now you have the long, annoying TSA security line. So it takes a long time. The whole process still takes a long time, but it doesn't have to anymore. I promise you this, if airlines were competing to provide you the best and most convenient security, they'd find a way to make it quick. That's what the free market does. We find ways to make things convenient. What about something like national defense? Well, I would say this. Do people want to feel safe? Yeah, but there's a different thing over here, right? If it's a, if it's police, you're just talking about your own neighborhood. And yeah, your neighborhood can get together and hire police, or you can live in a walled-off city or a residential area, or you could have insurance, right? You could have police insurance. And let's think about that for a second. I mean, why would police insurance be any better than the police that we have right now? If we had a private kind of security company, why would that be better? I'll tell you why it would be better. First, it would probably cost a lot less. Second, they wouldn't be harassing you with stupid stuff. They wouldn't be breaking into your house at 3 in the morning to see if you had a small Ziploc bag of marijuana. Why? Because they're working for you. The police are supposed to be working for you, by the way. They're just not. But in this case, if there's competing private security companies, as there are right now, you have all the different burglar alarm companies, right? If they were competing with each other, they would provide the services that their customers wanted as opposed to the ones that their customers did not want. You wouldn't have private security companies harassing you and giving you stupid speeding tickets, for example. You wouldn't have companies harassing you to just break into your house and shoot your dog the way police are doing right now. It's one of the many things that has come as the war on drugs has gotten more scrutiny, is that we're seeing that police officers, that SWAT teams actually break in for a minor amount of drugs. Shoot the dog is step one of that process. The other thing is that private police could be offered different levels of service. If you ever watch crime shows, police shows, you know that idea that the police won't initiate a search for a missing person until 48 hours have passed, right? The reason is because a lot of times people just get frustrated with life and wander off, or they're hiding out at a friend's house, or kids at their mom or dad's house, the parents. So they have this kind of waiting period. But I would be willing to guarantee that if this was all done privately, there would be services that don't have waiting periods. They'll say, listen, the second your kid's missing, we're going right after him. There might be a different service that says, listen, you don't have to pay for people who are very worried about their kids. We're not going to go after kids for 6 months. My guess is the first company would probably do better, but there's always choice in the free market. But what about something like a national defense? Now, that's a tricky one, isn't it? Because in order for me to pay to defend America, I'm also defending you from a foreign invasion, right? It's kind of, you can't defend one house against a foreign military without defending the neighbor's house. And that's a really interesting question to me. That's where we get into that border between libertarian minarchists and libertarian anarchists that say, there should be some basic level of national defense, and anarchists that say, listen, the best national defense is a heavily armed citizenry. And I can see both arguments. I tend to lean more towards the latter. But let's talk about this one part of national defense that it's troubling to people. Because most people say, listen, if we figure out, if we want to be defended, we'll figure out some way to do it. We'll figure out some way to pay for it. We'll figure it out. But what about if there's atrocities happening in another country? What's going to happen there? I'm going to say the same thing that happened when there was an earthquake in Haiti. Specifically, there was a lot of donations. Tons. Millions. Imagine this. Imagine if there were atrocities going on in a country, and there often are, and they're often ignored by the U.S. government because, we can't be everywhere all the time because it's expensive and it's not really necessarily in our national interest. But there are people that say, listen, that might not be in America's interest, but it is my personal interest to try to fight that atrocity. And imagine if you had voluntarily funded, voluntarily armed armies, private groups that not paid through taxes at all, that were just paid through donations. Imagine you had someone like that. Would anybody really object to the existence of that? Even me, a hardcore anarchist, I wouldn't mind. I'd be like, yeah, that's good. That's how you take care of stuff like this. Go ahead, fight these atrocities. But because it would be a voluntary donation, people would be pretty sure to check to make sure they're actual atrocities, not just, hyped up propaganda. They'd want to know, wait a second, is fighting these one type of atrocities going to pave the way for something worse? has happened in the Middle East, where fighting one pretty bad thing led to something much, much worse through ISIS. In other words, what if it was just done voluntarily and each of us, instead of abdicating our own decision, instead of saying, no, 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 I don't have any judgment, if we actually participated to that level in the civic process, where we chose whether or not to voluntarily pay our own personal money, whether a few dollars or a few thousand dollars or a few million dollars, towards a cause that we believed in. And don't give me that business about people don't give millions of dollars to cause that they believe in. They clearly do. There is records upon records upon records of this. Right now in the United States, the United States donates about $300 billion a year to charity. And that's not as big as our military spending is right now, but it's not much less. During peacetime, our military spending is about $500 billion. And that's with all the insane overspending and corruption and getting involved in everybody's civil war and all that kind of nonsense. Right now it's a bit higher because we're trying to fight every civil war in every country all the time, everywhere, defending everyone from everyone at all times. Yeah, that's expensive. But could – and do people donate to that right now? No, because they're already paying for it through taxation. But if there was a cause that people legitimately believed in, would people support it financially? Would they join militaries or militias designed to combat that? I think they would. Historically, they have. And see, that's the great thing about the free market. It is really, really, really good at finding a way to somehow provide you with something that you want. But the even better thing about it is it has no mechanism to provide something that no one wants. There's no way for the free market, for example, to prevent people from braiding hair for money. Free market's not going to provide that because it's stupid. The government provides it because the government likes to provide things that are kind of silly. But the free market has no real mechanism to provide anything that dumb. That's the great thing about the free market. It can't provide you with things that no one in their right mind could possibly want. Now, if you want to restrict government, making it smaller and smaller so that the free market is providing the things that you want, and no one is providing the things that no one wants, then you need to get to LP.org. Join an existing campaign. Run for office. Get involved in traditional media. Get involved in social media. Do whatever you can do to get these ideas out there, because I'm telling you, these ideas are powerful. And the more that people hear about them, the more they're going to spread and the more change we're going to see. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a pet parent? If so, you'll want to stay up to date on the latest tech gadgets and advances for your canine or feline friend. With a ton of apps, websites, tech toys, and more, you'll want to be in the know when it comes to the real treasures and the duds. For that information, listen for Pet Lover Geek with host Lorian Clemens. We test and discuss what's hot and what's not on the pet front, so you'll be better informed. Tune in Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety.
What makes a great leader? Most have a vision, one that starts beyond the resources available and continues from that point into developing a solid plan, organization, and company. Leadership issues are discussed each week on Voltcast, Illuminating Leadership with host Jeff Smith. Jeff has years of experience as a leader and executive coach, and his guests will bring you information that can help a team of any size. Listen every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back, Libertarians Working for You. There's been a tremendous focus recently on North Korea. Why? Because North Korea is, as it always has done, saber-rattling about its later weaponry. And not surprisingly, the military-industrial complex and its political cronies have insisted on trying to use this to create the next unnecessary military situation. So I want to put forth a few facts. Fact number one, and this is an important fact, North Korea has, as of yet, never attacked the United States. Not once. They haven't. North Korean terrorists, as far as I know, individuals who just happen to be from North Korea, haven't attacked the United States. The Bush Doctrine, which basically says that if we think there's going to be terrorism anywhere, we're going to attack it. That if terrorism is happening inside of a country, we're going to go after that, is a problematic enough doctrine. But the doctrine that says that if a country exists that has not attacked us through terrorism or military action or attacked us in any way whatsoever, we're going to go after that country still, is just too stupid for words. I mean, if we're going to start attacking people just because they dislike the U.S. government, I mean, hell, might as well start with me. I mean, maybe we should park 50 aircraft carriers outside my house. Disliking the U.S. government, not a sufficient reason for a large-scale military exercise. Attacking American soil, through a military, yeah, I could see that for sure. Today, the U.S. is realistically acting in collusion with North Korea. Let me put it like this. Imagine that you're a doctor and you make all of your money by treating, say, chickenpox. How do you feel about chickenpox? Well, on one side, it's kind of like an enemy. But on another side, it's an enemy that if you didn't have that enemy, you would go out of business. If you were a chickenpox doctor and chickenpox were eradicated, then your job would be eradicated. What about the military? What if your job is, you know, fighting threats to the American way of life? And let's say that there were none. Right now, there are none. There is not a single threat in the entire world to the American way of life. Today, if the military was acting based on any kind of sense, they would just shut down all operations. They would shut down all foreign bases. They would bring the troops home and say, listen, you know, you guys are having civil wars right now. We had our own civil war. We went through it. You know, you guys deal with your own civil wars. That's what we would be doing. I mean, that's the only thing that makes any sense. And all that energy that we're currently putting into military waste and creating enemies, it would be done. And we'd pull out of NATO and we'd say, listen, we're just going to work on making things better, getting better ideas, getting better products, getting better services. That's what we would do. So how does North Korea fit into that? Well, clearly North Korea is a great opportunity for those who depend on weapon sales and things like that, military contractors, etc. Because if we go to war with North Korea, that's a windfall for them. But here's the thing, it's not a windfall for us. We just have to pay a bunch of extra money for another stupid war. North Korea has not attacked the United States. Realistically, I don't think that North Korea can attack the United States. But whether or not it can, it certainly has not. But what it has done is fostered enmity for the United States within its own borders, and we have helped them. We are helping them do that. The United States government, not we the people, we the people, aside from those that have been excessively influenced by propaganda, don't really have any opinion about individual North Koreans at all. But the government is helping North Korea with its propaganda. What is North Korea saying? Capitalism is evil. Capitalism is the enemy. Capitalism is a bad idea. We need to build these missiles so we can fight the capitalists. What do capitalists like to do? They go around invading other countries, telling them what to do, setting up puppet governments. We are helping them in two ways. First, we are going around the world telling countries, our government is going around the world telling countries what to do, setting up puppet governments. That is a fact. So one, we are giving them credence by literally doing the thing that they're accusing us of doing. So one, we're supporting the government by just making their government more right. That's not to say I think North Korea is a good government. I think it's a lunatic government. It's a laughingstock of a government. I mean, you compare North Korea to South Korea, same people, same culture, same everything. You can see how bad a government it is. Compare North Korea to South Korea, you just see how stupid and just dumb communism is. But America is also helping them in another way, which is we're not letting them show their own people how stupid, how dumb communism is. You know why? Because we are keeping the wonders of capitalism out of North Korea. That's right. At the moment, there are sanctions. There's a ban on selling, I'm not kidding on this, luxury goods to North Korea. Do you know what it is that usually convinces people to like capitalism? Luxury goods. People aren't like, man, capitalism is so great because you can get food. Because you can get food in the forest. I mean, animals get food. It's luxury goods. That's the most powerful convincing thing. That is our most powerful weapon. And don't think for a second that the U.S. government doesn't know that. The thing is, they want an enemy. They don't want a big, scary enemy. Don't get me wrong. They don't want a big, scary enemy that we might lose a war to. That's not what they want at all. They want a small enemy that we can drag a war on for forever. In 2 years, if we're still in the Middle East, the U.S. government will be sending kids to war who were not even born at 9/11. Weren't even born. That's how long this stupid, silly, non-strategic, no end in sight having, no clear goals that anyone can figure out. I mean, they had one goal, which is to kill Osama bin Laden, which they did, and now it's still going for no one can figure out what reason. No one knows what the end point is. No one knows what victory looks like. No one knows that if X happens, we can finally leave. That blank hasn't been filled in yet. But they're worried enough that they're saying, well, we could set up an endless one for North Korea too. Now, here's the thing. If we don't go to war with North Korea, you know what's going to happen? A lot of military contractors are going to go out of business. Here in D.C., having grown up in D.C., I've seen the way that military contractors run, the lavish lifestyles. I've been to their Christmas parties, really nice parties. I mean, amazing food, obviously, because they have budgets that are essentially infinite. They're going to go out of business. They're not going to be able to maintain that kind of lifestyle anymore. They will go out of business. That's fine because they're not going to kill all their engineers. When they go out of business, it just means that the building gets sold to a different company. That's kind of a good thing because that intelligence and creativity and innovation that goes into creating a bomb can also go into creating something else. Right now, the military sector is taking a lot of the best engineers. Not all. Many refuse to work for the military for moral reasons. But they are taking a lot of engineers. A lot of creative minds are being taken away from other industries. Imagine if that those people were going into those other industries, making every product, every service, everything better. Not just creating violence, but creating things that are worthwhile. And before you say, well, that's never happened in history. Well, actually, it's happened in history at least twice that I can think of off the top of my head and maybe more times. Two most famous ones that I know of, Athens and Japan. Both were very militaristic countries. Athens Navy was legendary. The Empire of Japan was all about its military. And then they lost wars and they lost their militaries. Athens was restricted, I think, like three boats or something, or three ships. The former Empire of Japan was restricted to basically no military. And the result is they put their energy into something better, Japan making these technological marvels. Going from a cultural backwater, in World War II, Japan was just totally backwards country. Just centuries behind the rest of the world culturally, in terms of technology, in terms of innovation, in terms of freedom, everything. It was just a backwards, backwards, backwards country. And now look at it. I mean, there's no country that's more forward than Japan. Athens, military superpower, then stopped being a military superpower, and that's when you get Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, the thinking that has shaped the Western world, the great and powerful thoughts that have shaped the entire West came after that. And see, that's what happens when you have people focusing the energy that they would put on the military on anything else. Whether it's cool technology, whether it's big, grand ideas, whatever it is, you're going to get something better. Anything is better than just weapons of death and destruction. And we can have that right now. All it means is we just need to just call BS when we see it. Say, listen, North Korea didn't attack us. Why are we going to war? For what reason? They can't realistically attack us. They have what, one nuclear missile? Fine, we have 8,000. Do they really think they're going to take their one versus our 8,000? Are those good odds for North Korea? I mean, North Korea is maybe insane, but they're not that insane. They do, the emperor does have self-interest at the very least. It's made that abundantly clear. So rather than continuing this culture of endless war, let's end it. Let's shut down these military bases. Let's bring the troops home. Let's stop getting involved in other countries. And most importantly, let's stop these trade sanctions. Let American ideas spread with American products. Let let businesses in countries who want to sell to America, let them learn about American culture. It's a great culture. It's a good culture. It's an uplifting and ennobling culture. And the more that people learn about that, the more we're going to see our culture spreading without any force. If you want to make that happen, please go to lp.org. You can get involved in an existing campaign. You can run for office yourself. And you can use the campaign itself, the election itself, even if you never win, to spread these ideas, to share these ideas with people. Let these ideas catch fire. And if you want to do that, please go to lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Where are you getting your advice on buying, selling, or maintaining your most important asset, your home? Is it from a reality show on cable TV, a comparison website, or are you just flying by the seat of your pants and gut instinct? Stop now before you make another move. Tune into Real Estate Today with host and realtor Deb Tomorrow. You can't afford to play guesswork when it comes to your new or existing home. Listen every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Are you or someone you know interested in attending college? With both college tuition and college enrollment up 60% since 2002, there is a lot of competition, and careful planning needs to be a part of the process. Tune in to Getting In, a College Coach Conversation, hosted by Elizabeth Heaton and featuring a team of college coach experts. We'll bring you the tips, techniques, and know-how to navigate the road to college and do so the smart way. Listen live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Follow us on Twitter at Voice America TRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's Voice America TRN.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. We've talked a lot today about foreign policy. I want to talk a little bit about what's happening here, what's happening at home. What policies here are supporting the endless problematic policies abroad? And I want to talk about the opportunity that is often intentionally removed from people with a lower socioeconomic background. I want to talk about the opportunities that are most inherent in a lot of cultures that are most damaged by the welfare state and how they're intentionally removed to allow the state to continue. Here's the thing. If you are dependent on the state, you're going to be more likely to vote for the welfare state. It's just kind of common sense. And if you become independent of the state, you are almost certainly going to be less likely to vote for the welfare state. Every political analyst knows this. This is not some deep secret that I've discovered. Everyone knows this. The logical conclusion that, as far as I know, every person on earth has come to as a political strategist is that if you want people to vote for the welfare state, you have to make them a part of the welfare state. That's how you do it. But the tricky thing is this: people don't want to be part of the welfare state. No one wants to be part of the welfare state. It's not dignifying. It's not uplifting. It's not ennobling. You don't feel good about yourself. You're not proud. No one's proud to be on welfare. So the government's needed to do two things. One is to block other opportunity, and the other is to try to make the welfare state as normalized as possible. They can't make it heroized yet. I'm sure they're probably working on ways to make people proud of being on welfare, but they, at the very least, are trying to normalize it. So let's look at the first thing. How does the government take away opportunity? These people on welfare, they don't have any skills. Maybe they haven't gone to any kind of fancy college. A lot of the targeting is actually done culturally, in my opinion. A lot of the targeting is done culturally. A lot of it targets the African-American communities. There are major areas that are predominantly African-American where welfare has become normalized, and it doesn't need to be. But here's the thing. The state does whatever it needs to do to prevent people from lifting themselves out of the welfare state. People want to get out of the welfare state. I have yet to meet a single person on or off welfare who wants to be part of the welfare state. They all want to get off. So what do? They prevent the option of getting off. One classic example that was so just disgusting that even Obama, I mean, Obama, super left-wing Democrat proponent of all kinds of welfare, even he had to speak out about it because it had become so disgusting, which was the regulations against African hair braiding. African hair braiding is a very involved process. It takes a lot of skill. A lot of the time, the skill you learn in your family, you learn from your friends. But the thing about it is it's in pretty high demand, and it takes a lot of skill, and it takes a lot of work. The result is that people in the African-American community would be the most likely to be able to do this, and it would be a service provided in the African-American community. But what's the catch here? The catch that made even Obama say, listen, this is disgusting. This has gone too far. The catch is that the government has made hair braiding illegal without a license. The idea that somehow this poses a major threat, people braiding hair. And listen, I'm not going to say that African hair braiding is always done well. Yeah, people do it poorly. Some people do it too tight. And that can be actually give you a headache. I mean, doing it wrong is a problem, but it's kind of self-correcting. I talk to people that say, yeah, I went to this hair braider. She did it too tight, or she did it too loose, or she didn't do it very well. So I went to a different one. That was the whole thing. It wasn't that they, like, you know, had to, you know, get the government involved, or they had to, like, you know, go to war with some. They just went to a different person next time. It's no big deal. Now, right there, you have a perfect example of something that takes no startup capital. It's not like a restaurant where you need to buy a building or lease a building that meets all these commercial specifications. Realistically, to do hair braiding, you need just any room of any kind. It doesn't require a lot of special technology. That's all you need. That means it's a start. It's a natural startup business. That natural startup business has been targeted by government with licenses. This is not just restricted to the African American community. Lemonade stands, which are part of every culture, they're targeted too. Because here's what happens. What happens if kids do set up lemonade stands? You know what they might learn about? Business, money, profit, self-reliance, determination, seeing that money doesn't grow on trees, that you actually have to work for it, all that kind of stuff. Which is a good thing for kids to learn, but it's a bad thing to learn for them to learn if you're trying to indoctrinate them into socialism. In other words, if you want to make sure that people believe in statism, you have to start early. And that means you cannot let them see the free market. There are places right now here in America where at night, a high school kid play midnight basketball, but he can't work in a restaurant. And again, that supports the kind of like lazy dilettantism that's a central part of statism and socialism, but it prevents people from learning about how the free market works. When you work in a restaurant, you see innovation all the time. Trying out new ways to clean stuff. Different fibers, microfiber towels versus cotton ones. I mean, we're talking about innovations on every single little piece. That's innovation constantly. You see tons of innovations in restaurants because there's so much competition. And again, to make sure that kids don't see capitalism in action, don't see innovation in action, they say, listen, you can play basketball all day. That's totally fine. But they can't engage in the free market. See, domestically, the government realized what they also realized in foreign policy, which is that when people are exposed to the free market, they're going to kind of like the free market. If North Korea was exposed to capitalism, it would go capitalist. The people would demand it because it's just too much better than communism. And if kids are exposed to capitalism, it's just too much better than statism. It's just too much better. It gives you too much more freedom. It gives you too much more pride in yourself. It gives you so much more nobility of purpose. It gives you too much more stuff. If you let people see capitalism, if you let them start their own hair braiding businesses and food trucks, if you let them work while they're in school instead of just playing basketball, if you let people do that, you know what happens? Statism and socialism don't stand a chance. Nobody who participates in capitalism ends up believing in socialism. People who participate in fake capitalism, in other words, working for the government, they often keep on believing in socialism. But those who see the real thing, that day-to-day innovation, that trying out new ideas, the excitement of coming up with some new way, some better way, so whether it's a way to market or a way to do something, people who see that, people who experience that, people who see the joy of it and the rewards of it, I just have no interest in welfare statism after that. How could they? Once you've seen capitalism, how could you ever want to go back to welfare statism? And so in order to make that happen, they shield people from the power of capitalism by making sure that they don't participate in it. The good news is that we have libertarian groups, both partisan and nonpartisan, across the country working to get rid of these licenses. Getting rid of these things that say, listen, you might have some great ideas about hair braiding, but you don't have a half a law degree to fill out these 50,000 forms, and you don't have enough money to go to this, you know, education camp or this training camp. And yeah, it's fine that your grandmother taught you how to do it, but you know what? She wasn't licensed either, so we might have to send her to jail. That's the kind of stuff that's what they have to do to keep people away from it. Because once capitalism takes root, once that self-reliance takes root, there's no going back. And if you want to make some of that happen, if you want to see those ideas spread, if you want to see people of all cultures, of all races, of all economic levels be able to participate in that free market and not become just another piece of the welfare state, please go to lp.org. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, signing off until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.